space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to be talking about the Doomsday Machine. We're joined by Clay to talk about this one. Clay, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah.
We're ready. we're just freshly recording an episode.
Bringing my A game.
Bringing the A game. Obviously an inspiring episode for Clay. We'll see if that changes after this. But this is the Doomsday Machine. I'm excited to talk about this one. In this episode, the Starship Enterprise comes into contact with her sister ship, the USS Constellation, which has been heavily damaged by a huge, apparently invulnerable planet-killing machine from another galaxy. That is a mouthful. This is episode 6 of season 2, directed by Mark Daniels, written by Norman Spinrad, aired back on October 20th, 1967. Clay, before we lead into the audio break, I'll say that you have mentioned previously that Balance of Terror is your favorite TOS episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite TOS episode,
so
we'll kind of flip things around, and I'm going to play an audio clip right now. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down the Doomsday Machine.
You will carry out my last order, Mr. Sulu.
Mr. Spock, I am officially notifying you that I am exercising my option under regulations as a Starfleet Commodore, and that I am assuming command of the Enterprise.
You have the right to do so, but I would advise against it.
That thing must be destroyed.
You tried to destroy it once before, Commodore. The result was a wrecked ship and a dead crew.
I made a mistake then. We were too far away. This time I'm going to hit it with full phasers at point-blank range.
Sensors show the object's hull is solid neutronium. A single ship cannot combat it.
Mr. Spock, that will be all. You have been relieved of command. Don't force me to relieve you of duty as well.
All right, Clay, welcome back. I don't think you've been on the podcast recently. I'm all confused. I'm all jumbled up. What was the last episode you did? Do you remember?
City on the Edge Forever, I
think. Yeah, it must have been City on the Edge. Okay, so we're way back in season one. So we're in season two. So all this is new to you, right? Everything is different in season two of this show.
I know that Kirk's shirt is green now for some reason.
Yeah, it's apparently he wore some similar style in the first season, but this is different. It has some kind of like lacing on it or something that he didn't have. Is Chekhov in this episode?
No, he's not in this one. Okay. He's in the next one I'm doing.
Okay, and Uhura is also not in this episode, which is just kind of weird. But I guess we can't talk about Chekhov. We'll have more to say about Chekhov in the next one you do.
So yeah, the green shirt thing I always thought was weird, though, because I always thought that was like one of those things that, here's the episode singular where he wears the green shirt. I didn't realize it was something that showed up a lot.
Yeah, I always get the – it kind of reminds me of Picard's velvet jacket.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like this one as much, though. I'm not a big fan of the green shirt.
Yeah, it looks more bathrobe-y or something.
It's very, very casual. It's like you caught him in the middle of, like, entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, as I mentioned before the break, this is my favorite TOS episode. I really enjoy this one for a variety of reasons. And I've got a lot of stuff written down about what I like about it. But I guess we'll start off with... what's your general opinion about this one, and especially season two? Anything strike you as different? You can take it any kind of angle along those lines, however you want to lead us into this discussion.
I didn't notice a ton of difference. This is the first season two episode I've watched, and it's fairly deep into season two, right?
Six.
Six, okay. And I haven't really noticed that much different visually. But I really like this episode. I liked... most of this episode. There's a couple, you know, little technical quibbles that I had with it.
I don't think it's perfect, but it's it's close, I think.
Yeah, I think the opening of this is probably one of the best openings that I've seen.
Yep. You mean up to the part where they... Well, I mean, one of my notes is here that it feels kind of Jaws-esque in that TOS does a weird thing where they actually restrain themselves from showing you the Planet Killer for 15 right. minutes, which yeah. the show doesn't really do that all the time. Usually the cold open ends with revealing what the thing is that you're going to be dealing with.
Yeah, and they don't this one... This one, they end with them just, you find the ship, right?
Is yeah, that you find the constellation. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I think that was, I loved that stuff. It was really kind of creepy. I loved the first interaction with the Commodore there. Decker, is that
Decker,
his name?
Decker, yep. Who, I don't know if you might not have picked up on this, but in the motion picture.
Director of RoboCop 3.
Right. In the motion picture, it's Will Decker, who is the son of Matt Decker.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's the family
The
title.
Guy that... Seventh Heaven plays?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
No kidding. Huh. Yeah, I thought that stuff was great. I don't know if it exists out there somewhere, but if it doesn't, someone really needs to cut together this episode with the discovery of the destroyed Alderaan from Star Wars.
Oh, right.
actually, you could do a whole thing where the Enterprise takes on the Death Star.
Yep.
You could probably cut that together pretty well, actually. That would be pretty great. but yeah, the first, I really liked the concept because I'm a big H.P. Lovecraft fan,
mm-hmm.
and I am a sucker for, kind of ambiguous cosmic evil.
Sure.
And I really liked the concept of the Planet Killer. It reminded me a little bit of Galactus from the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they show it to you, and it's more like Galactus' dick.
Yeah, basically. Or his the tapeworms that live in his stomach or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they kind of phoned it in a bit on the design here.
I guess they dipped something in, like, plaster of Paris or something. That's how they made the thing. Apparently, the original scriptwriter was, like, very disappointed with how it turned out because his thing was much more of a, like, a spaceship that was sort of armed to the teeth that was
yeah.
sort of going around and blowing stuff up.
I would be disappointed with that, too.
Yeah. I kind of like the idea of it just smashes planets to bits and then just kind of inhales them. Like, it's very utilitarian in what
yeah.
it does.
I was thinking that too. There is something kind of like brutally efficient about it, but it's just not interesting to look at.
No,
you know, I think they could have. You know, it doesn't have to be like all tentacles and like moving parts and shit. But I don't know. It's just a giant dick sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes this one interesting to me is that the reason I think it's good for a TOS episode is that it has a bunch of different themes that it doesn't really pursue any of them too deeply, and mm-hmm. it keeps the action and the talking nicely balanced with each other, which the show always doesn't do very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is obviously most broadly this is basically a Moby Dick story, where Decker is playing the Ahab role.
More or less. Yeah,
a guy obsessed with vengeance against something that's not like aware of what it's doing. Like
right,
he's consumed
right.
by fixing the mistakes that he made. That this thing that isn't really like a sentient person that's responsible for it. It's more like an abstract idea that he's trying to get rid of.
Right, right.
But it's very light. That's what I mean. Like it doesn't really go into it all that much. It has a little bit of allegory about nuclear weapons in it at the mm-hmm. end. And then it just balances the action and the stuff. This might be the most action-packed episode. Maybe Balance of Terror would obviously be up there too, but this is like cinematically action-y, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and I think for better and for worse, unfortunately, because I think the design of the robot Planet Killer plus the limiting special effects doesn't make, the Enterprise flying around shooting phasers at it, super exciting.
No, it doesn't.
But yeah, I think it probably has. This is the closest to like, for the fleet versus the Borg cube kind of thing that they've done.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's. I mean, I think this is the first time we've ever actually seen a normal, at least like a starship, I think. We've seen Space Seed, which had like the sleeper ship,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think we've seen another starship.
Oh, really?
To this point, or at least we haven't seen one that's a Constitution class, which looks like the Enterprise, and there's apparently a bunch of them. So I think that's interesting. It also does the neat trick of you can save on the sets because everything is exactly the same when you beam
yes.
over to the Constellation.
Yeah, just light it darker and put some trash around.
Yeah, you put a pipe
ship.
In the way to signify that it's been under attack or something. But yeah, it has the whole Jaws-esque aspect of not really revealing the Doomsday Machine until 15 minutes in.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk kind of comes to the correct conclusion about what it is very quickly, which I think is funny. He immediately recognizes that it's a weapon built to like destroy everything.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like the intent of the writer is very much on display.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, he's trying to make an allegory about planet-killing weapons, so he makes sure that you know that this is a human or a designed planet-killing weapon that just, you know, got out of hand.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it hadn't. They hadn't really explained it as much, at least not at first. Because, like I said, I like the ambiguous stuff a little bit better, where it's, you know, finding something that's just out there eating entire solar systems.
Yeah,
unknowableness of that, you know.
Well,
I was just gonna say, I think when you get into cosmic stuff like this, and I think this episode also is kind of hurt by this as well. But there's a certain scale that isn't really relatable,
right?
After a certain point, and I think the more you try to define it, depending on what direction you're going in, sometimes trying to define the scale too much doesn't help.
Right.
Whereas leaving it a little bit more ambiguous as to what the motivations of this thing are is that much scarier, because it's like you don't know why it's doing this, where it came from. I like that they don't ever explain where it came from.
No, they don't. And I mean,
and then at the end, Spock's like, there could be a lot more of these out there. We have no idea.
I think it was a smart decision to determine that it's a robot. Right, like that this is not a living creature.
Yeah,
because the episode goes in a totally different way when you are not concerned about like whether killing it or not is an ethical decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the fact that it's kind of that they recognize that it's a weapon and that it's like automated and it doesn't really have any sort of thought about what it's doing. It's just doing mm-hmm. it. So I appreciate that they did that. I thought they did a pretty good job of leaving it pretty vague about what it is, besides explaining like what the threat is, that it's obviously on its way to, like, you know, the most populated center of the galaxy or whatever they say it's on its way to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually interesting that as a little bit of a side, one of the few Star Trek books, novella or novel or whatever, novelizations that I read was called Vendetta, and it actually dealt with this thing.
Oh really?
And it was a TNG novel. And they find another Doomsday Machine. So Spock was correct that there were multiple ones out there. But they actually explain what it was in the novel. And they explain that it was a last-ditch effort from some race to protect themselves against the Borg. And
okay.
that's what the explanation of these things are. That seems a little bit too specific. But, I mean, I appreciate the sort of vagueness of what they do here. I think it adds a lot. And I almost feel that the nuclear tie-in is almost unnecessary at a certain point.
Yeah, I agree.
When they come back to it at the end, it feels a little bit too much. I don't mind it when Kirk sort of monologues about it at the very start of the episode, mm-hmm. but after that, mm-hmm. I don't really need them to sort of sum up and be like, well, men have created things that will kill themselves, and hopefully we'll survive to 1975 and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was another piece where it felt like the writer was laying the cards out pretty clearly, because I think it would have been more interesting for them to do what they did and then not really talk about the fact that they defeated the thing with basically a nuclear bomb kind of thing. I don't think that was necessary.
Basically with the Jaws technique of you put something in its mouth and you blow it up.
Yeah.
And that kills things. Or maybe Jaws copied this, I guess, would be the other way to look at it. So I guess I'll go into my biggest problem with the episode. You can let me know what you thought about this. I think the episode's really, really terrific until the last 15 minutes where they make mm-hmm. this big mistake where Decker gets relieved of command way too soon. And after that, it kind of just coasts along as they slowly unveil the plan about what they're going to do, and then it just works. And I think that the best part of the episode to me is that there's a lot of tension going on in the first part. You have the Doomsday Machine, and you have the fact that Kirk is isolated from the ship and Spock is relegated to second in command to a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
And once you remove the crazy person from that, it feels much more like an average episode of TOS, where it's one plot line that we're just going to follow A to Z and see how it resolves itself in the end without any kind of surprises or anything like that.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I don't know if I minded it too much because you kind of needed to get to do what they ended up doing. You needed Decker to be relieved so he could fly. I guess he didn't really need to do that, but in the course of the story, you need him to fly into the thing's mouth.
Yep.
I guess to give Kirk the idea to do that, even though that should be like the first thing you try, I guess.
Yeah, you would think that firing into the gaping maw would be the decision. I'm more saying that they basically just do it too early. Like if you push it back 5 or 7 minutes, you can wrap up the story much quicker and you can keep that tension going with Decker for a little bit longer.
Yeah, what actually would have been really nice is if Kirk came to that plan on his own. Basically, so yeah, you don't relieve Decker. You keep him on the bridge. He wants to fight the thing or whatever. They have their opposing viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk decides to fly the ship into the mouth of the monster. And then Decker beams himself down and takes his place. One of those kind of things.
Right, sure.
Maybe that would be too easy. I don't know. That might be too cliche. But it would put Kirk in a position where he's doing what Decker didn't do, and then Decker has to,
realize his mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, and really take responsibility for everything he's doing and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
It would still have the same effect, basically.
What'd you think of Decker? I really like Decker as a supporting character in this.
Yeah, I liked him for about 90% of it.
What was the 10%?
I thought he went a little too crazy at the end.
Okay.
It
gave
me
a very Sunshine vibe when he's flying into the mouth.
Yes,
of the,
yeah, where he's just kind of free. See, that was another kind of like Lovecraftian thing that I liked, where it's like he's flying into the mouth of this giant cosmic beast, and the look on his face isn't like, oh my God, I'm burning. It's like I'm going insane because my brain can't handle this.
Yes, it's too awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he got a little too crazy. I really liked the stuff with him initially. When he was on the ship and having, arguing with Spock, I thought that stuff was really good.
Yeah.
Because he was, like, really riding that line really well, where it's like he probably is not fit for duty, but they can't actively take him off.
Right, yeah.
But he hasn't really done anything. Like, the argument he has with Spock is really, it's a coin flip in terms of the what the correct thing to do is. Because you could go either way and say, you're probably, it's the right decision.
Right, yeah. I think I'd agree with that. I think that I might have the opposite opinion, where I liked his ending and I liked his middle. I wasn't crazy about his introduction, just mostly because it falls back on this really irritating TOS trope of someone is asking someone to give them information about what happened and the person is only responding vaguely to that question.
Yeah, and they do that a lot.
That drives me so fucking nuts that he just won't tell them that he ran into a giant planet-eating machine that can kill everything that they've seen.
And also, why slap the guy around when Scotty is in the process of recovering the captain's log?
Right. So I really like the Decker character because I think it's what you're saying. He walks a fine line where it's not obvious enough that he shouldn't be in command, and there's not a lot that Spock can do. I really love the interplay between Spock and him. Spock is basically giving him the cold shoulder as much as he possibly can. He has one great quote that I wrote down when Decker says, we're going to chase it down and destroy it. And Spock says, you tried to destroy it once before, Commodore. The end result was a wrecked ship and a dead crew.
Yeah, that was cold.
That's a cold line from Spock. And I think that I would have just appreciated more of that back and forth. I was actually, when you consider it, Spock doesn't really do anything to take him out of command. I thought there was going to be a little bit more of like a gameplay between them where Spock would sort of set him up for failure or something like that. It really doesn't happen that way. And
you get a little bit of it when they do relieve him as far as his, backwards definition of what committing suicide is or whatever. That stuff is kind of fun, but I'm sorry, finish your thought.
Well, it ultimately comes down to Kirk just says, I claim as commander of the Enterprise that I'm in command and I give it to Spock. And that basically is what all that happens, and Spock takes command from it, which doesn't feel true to Star Trek, I don't think. Like, I always feel that the superior officer would have the ultimate say in any kind of situation like that. So it just wasn't, I wasn't crazy about the way that Spock gets back into command. There was no failure on Decker's part, really, I guess.
Yeah. Well, except for the suicide move thing. Mm-hmm. But that, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would have been, it could have been more interesting to have more of a, more of an argument between Kirk and him when they were in their respective situations. Because, like, I was thinking, oh, this is kind of interesting because you've got a guy who a guy who's higher ranking than everybody else on the ship, who's taking control, but he's probably not mentally fit for duty. But you can't prove that, and your actual captain is telling the crew to basically disregard his orders, but mm-hmm. technically he doesn't have any say to do that.
Right.
So what does the crew do?
Right.
Like, you could forcibly remove him, yeah. I suppose.
No, but they're they're all company men. They all do what, I mean, they do what's appropriate, right? They have to follow Decker's orders at this point.
Right, right.
Yeah, and it's, I think it was a smart decision. It doesn't make any sense in terms of the overall series ethos that Kirk is always the one that beams into situations that are dangerous, but it's a huge plus to this episode that Kirk is isolated on the Constellation for most of it, I think.
Yeah.
That was a smart decision because I think the episode would have been much worse if it was Kirk sort of arguing with Decker on the bridge of the Enterprise the entire episode.
That's no fun.
Yeah, that's not particularly interesting and not anything that people wanted to get into.
And also, I think that would lend to what I think is probably the weakest part of this episode. They've kind of you said in the second half you didn't like it because it kind of turns back into a regular episode more or less.
Yeah, and the pacing falls apart is basically my problem.
And I think the problem is that overall the stakes in this episode are very unclear. And I mean, I shouldn't say unclear, but they're like,
is it the alternative factor problem? It's too big of a concept to understand.
Yeah, kind of. It's like they're trying to fight. Basically, the planet killer is headed towards a very
populated
galaxy, but you have no idea like how close it is, or like clearly there's enough time for Spock to be like, hey, maybe we just don't do anything and we get out of here and let Starfleet know what's going on.
Yeah, I got a very poor sense of how fast the planet killer is moving.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, there's just no. You know, putting Kirk on the other ship and then eventually, screwing with the transporter and stuff is a really good way to bolster your stakes for your main characters. But as far as, like, an overall, the stakes of the actual planet killer are kind of, ambiguous. I guess you could argue it's not really about that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to have something like that.
Would you, how would you up it? Would you have like the sort of cliched movie thing where the planet, or even not even cliched, in like Best of Both Worlds, the Borg ship makes it to Earth at the end of the episode?
I would prefer at least some sort of acknowledgement of how much time they might have or how close they're getting or something like that. That's really, there's a certain point of no return that they, because as far as we know, they could, once they get Kirk back, they could still leave.
Right.
You know, Spock's initial plan of, oh, well, let's get out of here and alert Starfleet, they could still do that, theoretically.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how close the thing is. But so why does Kirk need to risk his life and blow up the ship if they could theoretically have time to, circle back and create a better plan?
Right, yeah, because I agree there are a lot of moments in, it's kind of the nature of an episode like this. There's a lot of moments where you're not really quite sure what the ship is doing. Mm-hmm. Like they're not attacking the creature. They're not being attacked. So it's like, what is the, what's the sort of like status of everything that's going on? Is something you can kind of wonder about.
I think it's a fairly minor problem though. It's not, that stuff just sticks out to me because I've said many times before, I'm a sucker for consequences and stakes and stuff. So I think that just goes to make it better.
Yeah.
When that stuff is really clear.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think it really takes away from much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that I really enjoy this one. I think I just have kind of minor problems with the pacing at the end and maybe some other minor type stuff that goes along.
I think I have a bigger problem with the level of power this thing seems to have or not have, where it eats planets, but the Enterprise can withstand like full on laser blasts from this giant mouth.
Yeah, I don't know why it has lasers. I don't think that doesn't seem necessary to me when the thing's purpose isn't really about destroying ships. So I don't know why it has the ability to sort of attack things like that when you think it would just be sort of single-minded on its pursuits of planets to eat.
Yeah. And also, like, why doesn't it shoot at the ship flying directly towards its mouth?
Right.
You know? Yeah. I don't know. I guess you got to have it do something for defense purposes for, to make it interesting visually.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. You could have come up with some technobabble bullshit to explain why you could just fly into the mouth of it. You know,
right?
Because the point of it is that it eats planets, so clearly it pulls shit into that thing.
Yep. So, and they claim they get caught in a tractor beam at some point.
So I don't see why you couldn't have Kirk shut the engines down or something, so it looks like he's just a piece of garbage. So one of those things.
Yep.
And then, click it on at the last second sort of thing.
Yeah, I just, you pointed out the things that you didn't like. Why do you think that I enjoy this one as someone who's gone through a bunch of these TOS episodes? Like, what stands out about it to you that you think it would be one of the, if you do think it's one of the stronger ones, why do you think that, I suppose?
I think the character works really good. Yeah, I think it's pretty exciting. I think the hook is really great.
It's a good concept.
Yeah, it is. It's a good concept. It's sort of excuse me. It's a little similar. It's seems like it's kind of another version of the godlike thing they keep coming into, but like not exactly. They seem to come back to that well a lot.
Yes.
In different ways. And I think this is one of the more successful ways that they do it, where you have something that you could you could on some level see as a god-type creature if you were less technologically minded.
Right, yeah, yeah.
There's a comic book called The Authority from about, I don't know, 15 years ago. Jesus, longer than that. 15. No, I guess a little bit more than that. Anyway, it's sort of a takeoff on the Justice League kind of thing. And in one of the first big story arcs that they do, they go up against this basically this Lovecraftian monster kind of thing that they determine is what the basis of Earth's concept of God came from.
Sure.
And it's just an alien. It's just an alien creature, but it is so different and so advanced that it was misconstrued by the developing humans as a god type thing.
Sure.
And it's that kind of thing, which I find that stuff really interesting. So I like it when they get into that.
Yeah, that kind of feels like a there was a TNG, I think Justice, the TNG story was about that. Like TNG, I think more than TOS makes the point that a god is just something that's more advanced than you are that you can't really understand.
Right.
And there are no gods, I guess would be the argument of the series, but
mm-hmm.
I think that the God aspect of it, I like the fact that it honestly kind of reminds me more of the crystalline entity from TNG, where the difference between them, I suppose, is that TNG took that creature idea and it stuck a sort of like, it's alive, it's a creature that we need to respect kind of mm-hmm. thing onto it. And mm-hmm. TOS has much more of the action adventure. It's a weapon of mass destruction. We have to destroy it before it gets away from us.
Yeah, I was actually kind of interested that they didn't do any of that here, because it seemed like it was ripe to do something like that. Where, I mean, like you said before, I guess they do establish that it's just like an automated machine.
Yeah, they call it a robot multiple times early on.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I think the opportunity could have been there to get into that, but they just chose not to, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, do you prefer it that? I think for this episode, it's much better suited to not be a creature that's around with them.
Yeah, I think if they did that, it would probably add too many questions. On top of what they were trying to do, because like you were saying before, it is more about Decker going up against this thing that doesn't really have any sort of mind to it. It's just doing what it does.
Yeah.
And so any emotional attachment to the events related to it is all on him. It has nothing to do with any choices made by the monster.
Right, exactly. He's more angry at himself than he is at the creature, in a way,
exactly.
Because of the decision he made is what caused. And I like the setup of it and everything. In trying to save his crew from the thing, he beams them down to a planet, and the thing just destroys the planet that he put them on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that's kind of a twisted. If it was a movie, that's the scene I would like to see. Kind of like what it looks like from the planet to have this thing coming at you.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was like, I feel like it's. I would love to have seen a pre scene kind of thing where it's like you get the tail. I don't know.
Just
I don't
the
know
shadow.
If that just,
like you don't see it, but you see something like blocking out the sun or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if that. Honestly, I guess I'm not sure about how much I'd want to see that because there. I think that would be really cool because you would get a really good idea of what the thing could do, and also you'd see the problem that Decker put himself into.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there is something to be said about just learning and just getting the feeling of it through the way he relates it to.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about. I think I was thinking about. It would have been cool if they found one of these things and they thought it was dead.
Sure.
So like they came. They basically the Enterprise shows up at the tail end of some sort of battle with this thing, and they thought it was dead, but then it. I don't know. It's just my mind was just wandering while I was watching it.
Right. It powers back up.
Part two.
I think it's kind of interesting in that doing the TOS rewatch has kind of opened my eyes to. I'm not like TNG didn't rip off or redo a lot of the stories, but they kind of just put a spin on a lot of the original TOS stories mm-hmm. that was a little bit different that you don't really mm-hmm. realize until you're watching these ones and seeing what the difference is and like, oh, this is exactly, not exactly, but it seems like very inspired by the TNG episode is very inspired by this kind of an episode. And it's nice to see that the sort of different takes on it that the different series had with these kinds of things. And this kind of story to me is a much better TOS episode than it would be a TNG episode.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I don't think this would have fit very well in TNG.
They'd have a really hard time figuring out a way to, if unless they changed it to being a living creature. I don't know how TNG would deal with this episode.
Yeah, I think it's missing some sort of external extra element to make it suited for a TNG. I guess I never really thought about that until you brought it up. That's a really good point. Yeah, I don't think it would have fit very well.
Yeah, it'd be. Did anyone? I can't think of anyone in TNG who sacrificed themselves by flying into something. Crusher, I guess, in that shielding episode, but that would be about it.
The thing about that at the end too is, like, was that his whole plan just to fly into it and see what happens?
I was a little bit surprised that they don't show you him blowing up the shuttlecraft. He just kind of flies into it.
Yeah. It's not like Independence Day where he's got like rockets attached to his ship
right.
or anything.
Yeah. That was because I would have thought that it's easy to justify, right? You'd just be like, oh, the shuttlecraft was too small to do a big enough explosion. Maybe if we had a bigger ship, it would be a bigger explosion.
And also if they had done it, let's say he flies into the thing and he blows up and the Enterprise registers some sort of damage on the thing or like some sort of shakeup in.
Well, they do. They do in this episode.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. They when he blows up, Sulu says there was like a minor power dip and Spock says maybe we heard it.
Oh, I must have completely missed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. So it's weird that they don't make it more. I guess it's a little bit odd that they don't give Decker a last hurrah. They do, but it's not his intention. Doesn't seem to be going out with the last hurrah. It seems more like suicide.
Yeah, I guess that's why I was thinking it would have been a little more fitting if they had done the old Armageddon switch there, where he goes down to the ship and knocks out Kirk and beams him back to the Enterprise or some shit like that.
Yes,
I think especially since. Decker doesn't really get any sort of redemption, really.
No.
He does if you want to count what he's saying, But in terms of what he's doing, he doesn't really change at all. He's just kind of nuts, and then he just goes more nuts, and then he kills himself.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the Decker is that he's not, especially for the series, he's not, he's very gray about what he's doing. Like, there's no,
right.
He's not overtly villainous in a way, because as you were saying, you can kind of understand his taking command argument kind of makes sense. Like, what he wants to do is not the right thing, but like his ability to take command makes sense, and his sort of sacrifice at the end, they also sort of gray it by not making it this grand last hurrah sacrifice type thing. So he's interesting in that he's not so broad a character that TOS usually has on, where you're clearly good or you're clearly bad.
Right, right. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, I think we've talked about Doomsday Machine for long enough. One of my favorite episodes, a very good episode of TOS in my opinion, but we're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and give our final thoughts and feelings and ratings for the Doomsday Machine.
Enterprise to shuttlecraft. Come in, shuttlecraft. Come in, shuttlecraft.
Shuttlecraft to Enterprise. Decker here.
Commodore, I must insist that you return to the ship.
You said it yourself, Spock. There is no way to blast through the hull of that machine, so I'm going to take this thing right down its throat.
This is Kirk. Matt, you'll be killed.
I've been prepared for death ever since I killed my crew.
No one expects you to die for an error in judgment.
The commander is responsible for the lives of his crew and for their deaths. Well, I should have died with mine.
You cannot succeed, Commodore. Your only logical alternative is to return to the ship.
All right, Clay. Well, welcome to Season 2. We didn't have any Chekhov for you. Uhura was strangely missing. But otherwise, Season 2 has been interesting so far. You guys can go to thepenskypodcast.com to read my write-ups for all the episodes that we haven't been podcasting. But Season 2 is much more consistent than Season 1, in my opinion. If you want to describe the difference between Season 1 and Season 2, Season 1 was basically 5 different stories that they told 6 times different ways, and you just see these same 5 episodes over and over again.
Mm.
Season 2 is much more unique, and there's a lot more different episodes that are coming into play here, especially stuff like this, which I consider to be one of my favorite episodes of TOS. I like those good action-packed episodes that don't focus too much on the ethics and morality of what they're trying to do, and they kind of stick to a much more firm ground of, we have a bad thing here, we need to blow it up, and we need to move on. If you guys enjoyed the episode, you can vote in the poll, which is in the upper right-hand corner of the video. If you're on YouTube, click the little gray circle with an eye in it, and a poll will come up. You can vote on our 1-5 scale. Clay, what are you going to give this one on that scale?
I think I'm going to go 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah.
Sure. I'm going to give it a 5. I've been hinting at that enough. I think it's a very solid episode. I have minor issues with the pacing towards the end, but I think that everything here works. I don't really have a lot of a problem with it. I like how vague it is, and I like how it's a very watchable episode of TOS, which a lot of them
aren't. Definitely.
So I think that gives it kind of a cachet that is necessary to give it a 5. So that's my justification anyway.
Yeah, I don't know.
You seem hesitant. I guess I'm curious why maybe it didn't grab you. And let me float some idea to you. Mm-hmm. I've watched 30-something of these episodes, mm-hmm. and I'm now in a TOS frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you're still sort of watching TOS from the outside, because you obviously haven't been watching as much as I have?
I think that's possible, yeah. I think within the context of watching all of these, I would probably say, yeah, this is probably a 5.
Mm-hmm.
Just from what I know of how the rest of the show tends to go, I'd say that, yeah, this is probably definitely one of the better ones. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's, I love a lot of it, but there's just something about it that doesn't entirely put it in like the all time for me.
Interesting. Okay.
I definitely would recommend it. Cause I'm trying to think, I think the only 2 other 5s I've given are, City on the Edge of Forever and Balance of Terror.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
I could be wrong.
I think those are. I have one other five as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I only have four going on so far. I mean, this. I think there's not a lot of fives in TOS.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm being too generous, but I think that the overall, there's probably only five really great classic episodes of TOS when all is said and done.
Yeah, you know, in that case, it's tough for me to say that because I haven't been watching them. But I, if that's the case, I would put my money on saying this is probably one of them.
Right, yeah.
You know what I did know? This is completely has nothing to do with any of that. But Decker has a different symbol on his shirt. Because like I guess...
An insignia? Different
insignia? Yeah, okay. Different insignia. Because I guess it was a thing for a while where each Starfleet ship was going to have a different insignia.
Oh, really?
But then they switched it. I could be 100% wrong, but I believe I read that somewhere. Huh. Where each ship was going to have a different chest insignia, but then eventually they just homogenized it into what the normal one.
Yeah. His obviously would be related to the Constellation. Do you think that TNG made a mistake by not having Commodores in the series, or are you okay with?
If having Commodores on TNG meant we got some Lionel Richie in there, that would have been great. That's a nice joke from the 70s for all you kids.
They just call it. They basically just upgrade them to admirals.
I think Commodore is a weird title.
Commodore feels like a Romulan title.
I guess I wasn't even thinking about it like that. It just seems like I've never seen a Commodore in a thing that was like really in. It doesn't have a lot of like intimidation behind it.
Right,
Admiral, you're like, oh fuck yeah, Admiral.
Yeah, I guess for everyone curious, I guess a Commodore is like the lowest rank of the flag line, so it's like a lower ranked admiral basically. Okay. They're higher than captains, but they're like the lowest rank beyond captain. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is kind of a weird thing. And they've had other Commodores in the series who don't throw their weight around the way that this guy does. So I was unsure if a Commodore was more like an ambassador type role where you don't really have any rank to you.
I will say, given this episode, I think it's probably the right call because I think Admiral would have too much pull.
Right.
You know, for what they're doing and for as crazy as he's being and as much, arguable insubordination that's being thrown back at him, I think Admiral would be too high of a rank for that to be – I don't want to say for it to be believable because honestly people probably don't even give a shit.
Well, you basically need another captain who can somehow outrank Kirk. Like a more senior captain.
Yeah,
basically.
Or captain plus.
Right, yeah. So, and that's what they got here. Doomsday Machine. I enjoy this one. Clay gives it a 4. I give it a 5. If you guys enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube. Like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating or review helps get the show out there. Rate us on all the podcatchers. Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast. Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. You go there for a couple dollars a month to get extra content. We watch movies. We talk about them. We watch TV shows. We talk about them. We do all that stuff. Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. Clay, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, no problem.
Do you have any new information? Anything you want to mention to the audience here?
The second issue of the comic book that I draw called Redline just came out this week on Wednesday. I'm not sure when this is going up.
Tomorrow, so it's fresh information.
Yeah. As of April 12th, it is on the shelf. So, yeah, go get it.
Yeah, check it out. It's on the shelf. It's on Comixology, all that stuff. You can check it out to support Clay.
And it features the most disgusting thing I've ever drawn.
There you go.
So look forward to that.
That's how you sell stuff. it was not inspired by the Doomsday Machine's open mouth, but we'll consider it along those lines. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're going to be back with... A classic episode is your next episode. Should we leave them wanting, or should we let them know? Do you think we'll run into Tribble if we don't tell them which one it will be?
Yes.
Guys, Clay will be back with The Trouble with Tribbles in a couple weeks. Until then, see ya.